This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Wednesday Adams Val
and Beans. We are coming to you. Well, I'm coming to you still in D.C., still in Washington, D.C. Monday show, I woke up and I had like almost no voice. So there was no way I was going to be able to do a podcast with you for an hour, Frank.
I'm so glad that your voice is. I didn't hear you. You just texted me the news. So I never actually heard you at your worst.
I actually tried to call you and you were too busy to pick up. You're too busy for me.
What was this? Monday morning?
Monday, you said in your text message, sorry, I was busy.
Was that Monday or Sunday?
It was Monday morning.
Mm. Okay, well, I'm sorry about that.
It's okay. Whatever.
I gotta look back at that because it couldn't have been that abrupt.
It was.
I was that short with you? Well, either way.
Let me find it.
We can iron this out in private. I don't know why.
I know it's weird because I'm kind of like in this weird mode where. So we had a freaking fantastic weekend for the Walkaway first anniversary. We had the movie on Friday night, and then Saturday we had the party, which was just amazing. And then Sunday we had the rally in front of the White House. And so we went down to the White House and we were there and we had a bullhorn and Brandon kind of asked me if I could help him because he has no voice. I mean, whew, that man's voice is just gone. And he asked me if I could help him. And I think between like, there was like this little confrontation. I don't know if you saw any of the video.
No, I haven't.
There was this guy sitting outside the White House with this like whole setup of stuff, anti-Trump. Like, and he had a big speaker and he was like screaming into his microphone and he had like this toilet. He has pants down around his ankles and he had like a Donald Trump toilet that he was like supposedly using. Like, it was just weird and he was weird. And, you know, I did a little Periscope and I showed him on Periscope. He was saying just the most ridiculous stuff. And like, he was trying to drown out our crew. We had maybe, I don't know, 100 people, maybe a little more that came down for the rally. He was trying to drown us out. And then, you know, David Harris Jr. and YG and Brandon kind of like took our megaphone that we had and walked over to him. And they were kind of going at it for a little while with one another. It was pretty interesting. We were just telling him basically, we love you, man. You know, your freedom of speech, beautiful thing. And he was cursing at us and screaming at us and got a little interesting for a minute.
Was it Jeff Daniels?
I don't know who that is.
Jeff Daniels, Dumb and Dumber.
Oh.
Haven't you seen him on TV in the last couple of days? Everybody's been sharing all of his clips from this interview on MSNBC where whatever. I'll keep going.
No, I haven't seen that actually. I haven't seen much of anything because.
God, you should listen to some of the sound bites that have come out of that. It's been shared by, you know, the toilet sitters out there. Who think that he is just, he has hit, oh my God, he hit everything. He hit everything. Even the MSNBC host was like, wow, at the end of his little spiel about how if we reelect Donald Trump, democracy is over. And the entire Republican Party knew this was their last shot to be relevant. So they clung to racism. I was like, oh, this is so boring. It's so boring.
It's the same crap over and over again.
Oh,
Jeff
God.
Daniels, huh?
But he put on a nice suit and he went on a television show. This guy just sat in front of a toilet in front of the White House.
Well, yeah, I mean, so. It was basically the same thing from what you're saying. Basically the same thing. Yeah, but like, so we did that on Sunday and then we did like a little strategy. We've been strategizing for, you know, the rest of 2019, 2020 and what we're going to do with Walk Away and the directions we're going to take and how we're going to implement the plans and, you know, all that stuff we've been doing. And as I've been doing that, I've also been reading so much material in terms of like the transcripts that came out and all of that stuff. And I'm leaving today as soon as we're done recording this podcast, actually, to go back to my little hole in my homeland. And what I think, Frank, is that I'm reading McCabe and I'm finding like, okay, well, now I got to see what Loretta Lynch said about this. And now I got to see what Sally Moyer said about that. And like kind of put it all together in one cohesive picture rather than piecemeal.
Yeah.
And I think it'll just be easier for people to, or for me to like understand and communicate. Because I got to tell you, Andrew McCabe's testimony, he didn't infuriate me as much as the Democrats infuriated me.
In what way?
Because like reading through it, like they go in half hour spurts. So the first half hour is the Republicans because they were the majority. And then the second half hour, you know, they go back and forth. And what was interesting to me is in the beginning, Nadler, I think it's Nadler, is fighting with Grassley about having his staff ask questions of Andrew McCabe. And Grassley says, that's not how we do things in committee. Your staff don't ask questions. And I'm like, ooh, well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Jerry.
Isn't that what you just tried to pull again? And it's like, if you're not smart enough to be able to form a cohesive question structure, or you can't have your staff do that for you, so that then you'll be able to just understand at least what you need to ask Andrew McCabe, there's a bigger problem there than just, you know, I feel like they all read these statements in hearings and they don't know what they're saying.
I was on a podcast yesterday and I was speaking with the host, Casey, about, you know, we were just going back and forth about what was relevant, what's coming out now, what I'm looking forward to. And I referenced all these transcripts that have been made public by Doug Collins and all that. And I pretty much said, well, when it comes to stuff like this, where it's going to be just copious amounts of reading, mm-hmm. I just wait until people like you go through them and then start saying, hey, you should definitely check out what's on page 101, yep. paragraph 3, and look at this. But the other thing I have to imagine is that makes me calm down a little bit more when I see hundreds of pages of stuff of mind where, and it's not just like, you know, you're reading a narrative that is running linear. You're reading sets of questions being posed to different people, yep. who are in league with each other, but at the same time, don't care too much about the person next to them, as opposed to whether or not they would gamble all of their lives away to save their own. So there's differences in opinion, differences in answers, slightly or overt or obvious. It's just, it's such a crazy crackpot pile of crap. And I have to imagine that just getting this stuff public, or I would hope getting this stuff public, is just the precursor to somebody saying, hey, we had already put all the pieces together. We just wanted to give you the unscrambled pieces. But here's the puzzle when the actual legal action comes. I hope that's just what this is.
No, it's got to be. It's got to be. And you know, all of these coming out at once, I think, says something. It's almost like frantic at this, not frantic in a bad way, but just like, all right, let's get all this out. Let's get all this out, because they've got to know that people like me and Jeff and, you know, journalists, real journalists out there that are writing for bigger publications like Molly Hemingway and Margot Cleveland and everyone are going to do the due diligence to read this stuff. And what I found interesting about, you know, like McCabe in general, too, is that he doesn't, they're asking him questions, and Trish Anderson is the legal counsel, right? So Trish Anderson is the legal counsel at the time, because he's still employed when he's doing this hearing at the FBI. And they also end up questioning her. Her transcript was released too. So she's sitting in his questioning, giving him legal advice about what he can and can't answer, because she's counsel. And then she's also interviewed, so she has the benefit of hearing all the testimony that came before her. And the other thing that I was going to say about the Democrats, and I'm going to get back to your point in a second, forgive me, is that they spend the first hour of their time basically kissing McCabe's ass. Like, they're like, oh,
your ass is so nice.
It's beautiful.
It's waxed.
Even though there's that huge zit over there, you know, we're just going to ignore that because
it's
the
just,
rest-
because no, it's not dietary. It's just an ingrown hair.
You know, it's funny. My mom used to, every time I had anything wrong, my mom would be like, it's an ingrown hair. One time when I was 16, I got to tell the story. She's going to hate me for it. When I was 16 years old, I had a hernia, believe it or not. I had a really bad coughing fit. I was sick with bronchitis, and I coughed so frequently. I guess the lining down there was just not strong, and I had got a hernia. And I went home from school, and it really hurt real bad. And I was like, she was at work, and I called her up, and I'm like, Mom, I'm like, something's wrong. I have this huge bump. And she's like, oh, it's probably just an ingrown hair. Meanwhile, like, I have my intestine is incarcerated and like on the verge of exploding inside of my body.
You have a compound fracture, your elbow sticking out of your skin. It's just an ingrown hair.
Everything's an ingrown hair for Mom.
Okay, well, keep going back to Andrew McCabe's ass.
So like, they basically are kissing his ass for the entire first hour. And they're saying to him like, oh, you had a dignified career. You spent so much time at the New York Field. Did you know how much time Andrew McCabe spent at the New York Field Office of the FBI?
No.
He spent years there doing lots of like counterterrorism work and all kinds of stuff. And I found it really interesting. You hear my voice? It's going. I found it really interesting that he had that kind of an ingrained sort of stint there because of all the drama that unfolded with the Wiener laptop that we've spoken about ad nauseum on the show. Because, you know, like he knows the culture there. He knows the bureau there. He was there for so long. He was at such a high level within the department there. I don't remember exactly what role he was playing there. But the fact that he had that and then he called them up later on and accused them of leaking something that they, like the fact that he could do that to them after spending all that time in his career working in that office, understanding the dynamic of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The fact that he could then turn around and blame them for something they didn't do to save his own ass, that says a lot about McCabe, more than we thought.
You know, to change gears just slightly, but staying in the same arena here, you're talking about how a lot of these transcripts, the release of them is almost like a frantic thing. But, you know, because we know who's releasing them and what is coming down the pike, I think it's a little bit more of a preparatory house cleaning. I think that but the thing that really gets me, especially when you brought up just past exchanges in these committees about how it's, you know, how inappropriate it is to allow staffers or to petition for staffers, people who could actually come up. Who can come up with questions to ask, because everybody that was actually elected to sit in those seats are too stupid to come up with their own questions.
Yeah.
So the thing that gets me is this, you know, because obviously outside of that, we're seeing Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff. Everybody's trying to pull whatever weight they have in creating a reason for impeachment now, even though a couple of months ago they knew that impeachment was foolhardy because there was no reason to go and pursue that. The Mueller report was nothing, but they try, and try they must. And Nadler and this House, these House committees, I swear to God, it's quite astonishing that the only thing that they have to point to as far as evidence of criminality is their own growing outrage over their lack of control over the situation.
It's true. Like
they have no control over the situation. There is nothing to control. The situation that they tried to push down the American people's throats, yes, has been swallowed by many, but it is ultimately false, and there's nothing there to hold it up. And because it's impossible for them to pull the strings on this anymore, they actually are taking their own personal outrage level as evidence that something must be done.
Yeah. And isn't there, I read like in my travels, that there was a poll that just came out about sentiment in the country in regards to investigating the investigators, which is what they're saying now. And like the fact that now Pelosi is like scrambling this morning, is going to have like a meeting to hold an impeachment vote, like amongst like upper level Democrats. Like, I don't understand what they think this is going to accomplish. Like, first of all, you'd think that if they were being strategic about things, which they're not at this point, they're desperate, they would be holding on to this until before the re-election. Just as like, because it's just ceremonial. There's nothing that's going to come of it. There's no way the Senate is going to vote to impeach Donald Trump. It's just not happening. So why are they expending that political capital now when public sentiment doesn't seem to be lined up with that?
I don't know. I don't know, especially since Nancy Pelosi has been the one who, you know, with whatever brain cells she has left and with whatever political you know, acumen she has.
She's a mess.
Oh, mess.
She looks like a mess lately. She's so disheveled.
It is. It's funny because I said this maybe 2 weeks ago on the show. Everything I say is only 2 weeks ago. but it's true. These conversations repeat themselves within 2 to 3 week cycles. But I look at her and I almost forget. It's almost as if the house does not have a speaker right now.
Yeah.
Because I just keep forgetting that she's speaker. She is just. Oh my God. It's like somebody allowed a child who can barely speak, come into the House of Representatives, hold one of those squeaky gavels and just do whatever the hell they wanted to for 2 years.
Did you see, like, okay, on that point, first of all, she hands that gavel over to AOC as like some sort of like, oh, take your child to work day sort of thing.
Wow. And, it's a gavel.
Oh, look, I can
it's like a little hammer. It's a wood hammer.
I can run the House of Representatives. I can't
wait to be Speaker of the House of Senate Chambers.
And then, you know, you've got her now, like, sitting with Elizabeth Warren doing, like, Game of Thrones analysis. Like, she's being used, like, to try to prop up these presidential candidates with some kind of youth energy. It's really sick. It really is. I want to play
she's
a
actually,
clip.
She's actually using Game of Thrones analogies?
You didn't see that her and Elizabeth Warren sat down with one another to talk about Game of Thrones finale?
No. Did they crack open a beer, too?
From her fridge? No, I don't know. I don't think so. They were sitting in front of a black background, and I just couldn't watch it. And then you had Kamala Harris being interviewed by CNN or MSNBC, and they're like, okay, we're going to play a game. What are your three favorite genres of music? And she's like, oh my gosh, I think my favorite is hip hop. Yeah. And then she can't even name any of the songs from her favorite artists when they ask her. It was like so stupid. I'm like, my gosh.
She likes hip hop. She carries hot sauce in her purse.
She said that Cardi B was her favorite artist. And I'm like, oh my gosh. This is a woman who said that she drugged men.
Yeah. Well, if Cardi B is your favorite artist, then you like most of the rambling hobos on the city sidewalk in New York then, because
it's
that's
really,
all it is.
It's
city,
really.
Yeah. No, that's all it is. Homeless people have better diction than Cardi B. She is a well-pampered, I don't even know, but it's just whatever.
Like, there's a few people in this world that I think are trash, and that's one of them. I'm just saying. It's like there's nothing redeeming about her at all. She's gross. She's just gross. Moving on from that, because I could spend an hour on Cardi B alone. Let's talk about this clip that came out last night on Hannity. I'm going to play it. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay.
Bruce Orr warned them in August of 2016. Now we got this issue, this conflict in testimony between Loretta Lynch and Comey. But Comey also signed the first warrant FISA application in October 2016 and then told Trump, then president-elect, January 2017, it's not verified. 3 months earlier, he swore that it was. How big a problem is all of this conflict pretty much between every member of the deep state involved?
Well, first, the president's going to add to the problems of the deep state when he declassifies these first documents in the next several days. I think the most important thing that has changed in the last few months.
Yeah, it is a big detail. And so we have similar sources, I'm getting.
Yes, absolutely. I've confirmed that sometime in the next 7 to 8 days, the president will declassify the first of many documents. This first one we used to call Bucket 5, the exculpatory statements that the FBI possessed about its targets before it went to the FISA court. But let me tell you about one important dynamic that's changed. Today at the Hill, we had a new poll out. For the first time, a majority of Americans support investigating the FBI's conduct and the start of the Russia investigation. That is a sea change in public sentiment. And I think it's a sign that the American public is on to the scam that was going on here.
And it's also a sign of the great investigative work you, Sarah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So John Solomon says within the next 6 to 7 days, Matt Gaetz has come out and said it's right around the corner. I think Mark Meadows did the same. So I think the first bunch of declassification will be within the next week, which is great, Frank. You want to know why?
Why?
Because I'll be home. And by then, I will have read all 1,000 pages of transcripts, and I'll be ready to go.
You know, I wish I had your reading ethic, because I would not have this. I would not have this bookshelf behind me with about the 56% unread books.
You know what I hate though? I honestly, I was talking to my beautiful friend Amy, the national treasure, yesterday.
You know,
hello, Amy. Oh yeah, I miss Amy.
Amy's fantastic. She has cooked us meal after meal after meal here in this home that we're staying in. Meal after meal.
You guys in an Airbnb?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know what's weird about Airbnbs? I went to my buddy Koss. He was one of my groomsmen. You know, my 2-year anniversary was yesterday, right?
Oh my gosh, I forgot. I'm so sorry.
No, don't. I wasn't looking for a card. I was just saying. But one of my groomsmen was, he got married last year. And last year we went off and for his bachelor party, we went to Saratoga and we used the Airbnb. Beautiful house. But the weird thing is, I don't know, I guess some people prepare some houses just to be these spots where they can make money off of it. Other people literally leave all of their stuff behind. All of their food is still in there. Their kids have all of their pictures up from school in their bedrooms. I was sleeping in a child's room. It was very weird. There's a teepee in the middle of the room. There was a change drawer with all the child's like piggy bank savings.
That's so weird.
Yeah, if I was a scumbag, I would have taken the $5 bill that was in there. But I'm not a scumbag.
Of course. You're not. And that's why I love you.
But what was in this house? Is it like somebody's?
It's an Airbnb house. It's beautiful.
So somebody's wardrobe is not there.
No, there's no wardrobe here.
Okay.
I do have a little bit of a freaky story I can tell you though. After we're done here, this podcast is a little all over the place today, but that's okay. What I was gonna say is I was talking to Amy last night, saying that I feel this like sense of like, I almost feel like I haven't gotten through this stuff quick enough. Like, I feel like I want to be putting out more, but like, I really need to kind of take them all in and then compare them against one another and really give somebody, you know, people a good idea of what's happening rather than saying, okay, here's my thread on Andrew McCabe's testimony. Because a lot of people have already noted that James Comey and Loretta Lynch have completely contradicted one another about the matter comment, right?
Yes.
And that Michael Cohen has lied or basically said, maybe I misunderstood what Donald Trump was trying to get across to me when I said that he instructed me to lie. And that, you know, like there's all these little discrepancies amongst like Andrew McCabe's testimony. He was saying he didn't have anything to do with the drafting of the memo and the Republicans are hammering him on it. Like, does it make any sense to you? Does it make any sense to you that you wrote a memo exonerating Clinton month before her testimony and all these witnesses' testimony, but you didn't also prepare one for indicting her? Like,
the only people I would ask that question of are those who are celebrating that these contempt and these impeachment hearings are all predicated on something that Donald Trump and his administration and the current Republican Congress and the last Republican Congress had been a part of. I mean, these are the people that you're saying are being unjustly targeted by the most corrupt administration in history, the Trump administration. But on the same, you don't see all these contradictions. You don't Yeah. see them turning on each other. As far as Michael Cohen goes, can you elaborate on what on that whole piece? Because I had not heard that. What you Yeah. just mentioned about Cohen.
Yeah, I gotta find it. I thought I put it in my
But Comey and Lynch contradicting each other is something that was really interesting right there. It stood out like a sore thumb because there was no two ways. I heard it in my head. I heard Comey's voice come back up like a soundbite. I was actually able to trigger in my head with him saying that, you know, she had directed him to refer to it as a matter and that it had disturbed him or concerned him, you know, so. That right there was, oh, and now yeah. she's saying it never happened. So what is, but just, I know I asked you about Cohen already, but as far as Lynch and Comey, what is the, what do you think is riding on one or the other being right?
Well, it's a lot because Jim Comey made a whole point to say, like he tried to pass the buck. I mean, that was a big thing. He came out of that, you know, came out with that out of nowhere seemingly. Right? You remember it came out of nowhere? It was just like, why did he just say that? I don't know if you remember that. It was very odd in his testimony. Like he just came out of nowhere with it. And so like Loretta Lynch in her testimony, listen, I don't doubt for like, I didn't read a lot of it. So just let me get that out there right away. But I don't doubt for a minute that Loretta Lynch is very adept and skilled at covering her own ass. But just her description of the tarmac meeting and how weird it was and how uncomfortable she was and how the conversation went on for so long and like the details behind that just kind of make me want to believe what she's saying. Couple that against, and she's not spoken very much, right? So we don't have a large body of information to judge her upon in terms of her own public comments, right?
Right.
But with Comey, he's been all over the place blabbing away like a freaking motor mouth.
Yeah. And he won't stop.
And he won't stop.
He and Brennan is.
Oh, boy.
That guy is. He's going. Well, by the time this is all over, he's going to need a padded room.
Look, did you see, like, I tweeted something yesterday about Brennan, and we'll get back to Cohen in a second. We guys out there, Frank and I haven't spoken in since, what, Friday?
Friday.
Yeah. So, like, usually we have conversation every other, you know, we talk.
We texted a little bit on Sunday.
A little bit, but not about anything of substance here.
No.
You know, we usually chit-chat. So, like, we're kind of, you know, encroaching this stuff for the first time together. So, Brennan yesterday, there was a tweet that goes out from Snerdly, from the Rush Limbaugh show, which has been, it almost feels like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin have gotten some sort of messaging. Like, this is where we're at now. You guys can talk about this, 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 and this. Have you listened to any of Rush lately by chance?
I have, to be honest, I don't listen to Rush. I never got around to actually even introducing myself. I know he's out there.
He's great.
Yeah, I have no opinion. That's just it. But Levin, I keep up with the most out of all those three. And Hannity, whatever he does, usually just crosses my path in the form of YouTube highlights.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Bo Snerdly from Rush Limbaugh's show tweets out, former CIA director Brennan on Capitol Hill at Democrats' invitation for Iran briefing. This is from Fox News. And I'm like, whoa. Hold up a second. He has no security clearance. Didn't they strip his security clearance away from him?
Yeah.
What the hell? Do I think that that's why he's there? Probably for a good part of it. But I also think that a good part of it is that he is getting briefed on what the hell is coming down the pike for him. Let's have him come in here under the guise of Iran.
I don't know. You know, as far as Brennan goes, though, I was going to ask you also about whether or not your opinion, because I know that it's very hard to have a set opinion, impossible almost to have a set opinion on George Papadopoulos, but he's been very poking and prodding again. He's been poking and prodding Brennan on Twitter again. Last night I saw one tweet. I had retweeted it because I thought it was pretty fascinating. Going right after Brennan. Once again, throwing it in his face that he had been the one to send all of the Western intelligence operatives his way, whether it be Stephen Halper or MIFSID or anything like that. So he is still poking and prodding there too. And of course, everybody's got a book out.
Yeah,
everybody's got a book out. So what have you still just been sitting back and observing this whole thing, or has your opinions been hardening in any way on Papadopoulos?
No hardening of opinion. I'm just watching. I'm silent observer at this point, because it's just so, all of it is so weird. Like, I just get this weird, like, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, because the thing that's getting me here is I don't doubt that George Papadopoulos has some interesting information that is already in mind. And then also, if you are part of this situation, and in such a big part, even though, you know, in the grand scheme of George Papadopoulos' involvement in the Trump campaign, it was pretty insignificant. But that insignificant piece had been turned into such a significant one, probably because of how, you know, subtle of a role he was playing. So I don't doubt that he's also putting pieces together on his own. But if we're looking at the head honchos of this scheme that not only was working together just on the whole election end, but in the years leading up to the election with the whole hammer and, you know, the surveillance operations that were going on, spying on Congress and judges and the American people at large, all that stuff. If they are all turning on each other and if they are all contradicting each other, then even if George Papadopoulos came into this as a plant at first, and turned into a patsy that they thought, because of his small role, would be able to be flushed in a nice, easy way, and nobody would ever think twice about what he was saying about this stuff. I mean, everything he says is should still be real information to a certain degree, too. So,
well,
I don't
this
know.
Is what I think might clear it up for me a little bit as I'm sitting here pondering with you. Like, what would it be that could happen that would make me kind of change my opinion? What I think may help me change my opinion or solidify me one way or another is if when Donald Trump releases all this, what John Solomon said would be exculpatory evidence, and in it is the exculpatory evidence that we expect to see, which is that Papadopoulos told the people that were trying to get this stuff out of him that he did not have any relationship with the Russians and there was no collusion going on back then. I think that may be helpful. Mm-hmm. Because at that time, he would have no reason to say that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. It's not confusing at all.
No, and to be honest, that's really all that's been happening. You know, you talked about you and I usually chit-chatting and staying, keeping our heads above water with all this. But aside from the insanity at the southern border continuing, mm-hmm. aside from the saber rattling with Iran and Venezuela, which continues to just be saber rattling, which tells me in my heart of hearts, at least I hope, is that this is all just nonsense. And nothing's actually really going to happen as far as war goes.
I really worry that the Democrats are seriously trying to provoke a war on purpose. I really do.
Well, I do too. I because honestly, there's nothing because it ties into what we were saying earlier in this episode. Nadler and all the ratty people in the House, they have absolutely nothing. The fact that they're pushing it this far on the basis of the Mueller report, which they have refused to read, you know, and less than 1% of it has
not anymore. They read it live, didn't they?
What? The whole thing?
Yeah. Didn't they read? They brought in John Cusack and they went on C-SPAN and the Democrats read the entire Mueller report out loud.
The 99.1 unredacted version?
No. The actual.
Okay. So then, but all this contempt and all this impeachment stuff is based upon the fact that they believe that more information is being hidden behind these redactions, right?
Yes, but not really, Frank. They were trying to make a point, I think, to say we read it and now you did all too. And they couldn't, like my friend was telling me, they couldn't pronounce the names. So they, it didn't have the desired effect. We'll put it that way.
Well, either way, that's what I'm saying. There's no news out there. There's been no news as far as all this stuff goes. Where the news is going to come. I mean, I guess the transcripts, that was something that we can prologue to what I think is going to be a deluge of declassifications. But we're really just getting hammered over the head with cotton candy nonsense right now.
Yeah, I guess so. There's a lot on Cohen. I'm looking into that right now, actually, as I'm talking to you. I mean, I guess you're right. I mean, nothing really is happening. Like, independents are coming out with some really good stuff. Like, Undercover Hoover has had some fantastic threads. Jeff Carlson. Oh, you know what came out that we could talk about? Let's take a quick break, and I'll tell you my story I was going to tell you. And then we'll talk about the UK. How about that?
Okay.
Because that's big. So last night, I went upstairs to go to bed, and I lay in bed, and You know, when you spend a lot of time with people, you start talking about like spooky stuff and whatever, right? It was like 12:30. I went up to lay down and go to bed, laying in my bed, and all of a sudden, I have my headphones in. I'm just listening to a video. All of a sudden, I feel the foot of my bed. I feel this like bang on it. And I'm like, what the heck is that? And I'm like, probably nothing. And then I just continue. And then like not even a few minutes later, I feel it again. And I'm like, what the hell was that? So now I start looking
Airbnb?
Around.
Yeah. Airbnb house? Okay.
Yeah. Now I start looking around to figure out like what fell on my bed, right? I'm like looking around the room. I'm like, something fall from this. And then I'm starting to think to myself, like Brandon is like hiding under my bed, screwing with me, you know? And I'm like, well, this bed is really low down to the floor. I don't think it could fit under there. And then it happens again. And Amy just happens to text me and ask me where the firewood is because we want s'mores. And I'm like, I used it all. Is someone in my room? And she's like, I don't think so. Aren't you in your room? And I was like, duh, obviously I'm in my room. But then I was like, no. And I said, come up here. So she came upstairs and I was like, I had her come in and I'm like, I told her the story and she was just looking at me and I'm like, it's weird, Amy. Like, seriously, feel my bed moving and I can't figure out what it is. So I went downstairs and everyone was still in the living room and I told them the story and everyone's like looking at me like, oh my gosh, that's really weird. And I had Melissa come upstairs and grab her laptop that was in my room. And she was like, wait a second. I think she's like, the door, we were opening and closing the door downstairs and that's like right near your bed. So sure enough, I had her do it while I was laying there. And when you close the outside door, it makes like the floor move, I guess, a little bit. Wow. And I'm serious. I asked Amy if she could sleep in there with me.
But prior to doing the door test, though?
Yes.
Okay, after the door test, you were fine.
After the door test, I closed my eyes and went to sleep like a baby.
All right, that's good.
But it was so scary. And like, I was like, thank gosh, there was some like logical explanation for this. And Brandon was like, I thought Tracy was supposed to be the smart one.
Well, at nighttime, all the smarts goes away. The imagination comes in at nighttime. The smarts go away at night.
They sure do. And I was like laying there like, there's got to be some rational explanation for this. There's got to be. And I'm like, what could it possibly be? Because the whole bed didn't move. Just that little spot moved. Mm. Just a little spot. Anyway, let's get back into real news. Nobody wants to hear about this nonsense.
Yes, they do. Hey, Tracy, did you hear that there's a widespread flu-like illness that's hitting all the immigrant or the migrant processing facilities? Uh-oh.
Oh, yes.
Imagine that. Imagine that.
Hordes, I can't believe it.
Hordes of unchecked, unvetted people just crawling across a nation's sovereign border would have health problems. And they keep going. And that's why I love when people say, oh, there's a mysterious polio-like sickness that's
it's
popping
not mysterious.
Up. It's not very mysterious. You're just once again ignoring everything.
Yeah. No, yeah, I know. And they don't want to admit that they're letting all these people in.
Do you know anything with all of your contacts, all the people you talk to? What the hell is happening down there? Why are thousands, tens of thousands being let in every couple of days and then released into streets? Why is this still happening?
I don't know from anyone why that's still happening outside of the way the laws are written right now.
Jeez.
Yeah. And I want everybody to understand too, like, I feel like they're not, it's not like they're not trying. I really don't think that it's that. It's like there has been a deluge of these people because of the policies that were forced to have been changed because of the, you know, because of the media, because of the fact that the left has chosen to like demonize, they're doing like DNA testing now to figure out if these people are really even other people's children. I mean, the crisis that the Democrats have created with immigration because of their rhetoric is so disgusting. Like, you understand what I'm saying.
You would think that with all the rhetoric that the commies and the Democrat Party have created, that all these migrants would be running to Antarctica instead of the racist, dangerous United States. I just don't get it. This is the worst country on earth. Our history is one of oppression and hatred. Please come here. Become a migrant. We are a country of immigrants.
We have a dictator in the White House who wants to kill everybody.
And we have a genocidal lunatic in the White House. Come
and
on.
He hates you, but we want you to come here.
Yeah, we need you.
We need you. We need you. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's really bad. Yeah, it's really bad. Goodness. Let's talk about the UK for a minute.
Okay.
So Jeff Carlson had a really good piece in the Epoch Times. UK intel agencies frame Spygate involvement ahead of Trump's declassification. And basically he says, in this thread, and I shared this article too in my travels, The Telegraph published two separate articles, and they detailed their version of kind of when the heads of the United UK intelligence were briefed on former MI6 agent Christopher Steele's dossier. And it goes to lengths to make a couple of points. The first point is that UK intelligence heads were briefed on Steele's information only after the election. And UK Prime Minister Theresa May was never directly informed of the dossier's existence. It's very interesting because if you remember, May like flocked over here as soon as humanly possible. She was the first meeting that Donald Trump had.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it really interesting that she was the first one to run over here, given the UK's supposed involvement here. And then Jeff goes on to say that the Telegraph noted the involvement of Charles Farr, the former chairman of Britain's Joint Intelligence Committee. And the Telegraph reported that Steele met with Farr on two separate occasions to inform him of the events and information contained within his dossier. The first meeting was reported as being 1 week after the election in mid-November. And then by the end of that meeting, Farr decided that the allegations within the Steele dossier had to go up the chain of command. And I'm just going to stop right there for a second. Because, Frank, you and I read this dossier and knew immediately that it was bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you read it and I read it and I was like, I'm sure, I don't know if you read it. I'm just being facetious. But like, I read it and I was like, oh my God, I could use this document to debate itself and win. Like, it completely contradicts itself in so many different areas. And so for these supposed heads of intelligence agencies to supposedly think that this intelligence is so sincere and so serious that they need to escalate it up further proves either we have some really dumb people running our intelligence agencies in this world, or there's something bigger going on here.
Yeah, it's never just stupidity. There's always malice there. It might be a mix of two. The stupidity comes in with thinking that it can the scheme can go on forever and go unnoticed. But yeah, absolutely.
Well, I can't believe there's that much incompetence. But he goes on to basically say, I'm going to read the rest of this because it's really important. The second meeting references two new Steele memos written in November, which we haven't seen. The known Steele dossier contains 17 individual memos, including the December memo, which we've spoken about a lot on the show. But we don't ever see any that are written in November. In the UK court documents where he was in that trial because the guy was suing him for defamation overseas. It was the one that BuzzFeed was involved in. Steele states that he produced no memos during November. So if there are two November memos, as the Telegraph states, they weren't disclosed to the court in the UK. So there's a big, huge problem there. And then they talk about how there were no known memos created in November, but there were three in October on the 12th, the 18th, and the 19th. Three memos in the dossier were written. On October 11th is when he met with Kavalek, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for European and Eurasian Affairs. And that was 10 days prior to the FISA warrant.
Right.
Am I making sense?
Yeah, I have a pretty good recollection of this timeline based on all the Dan Bongino work that he put together with he and John Solomon with the Kavalek memos and all that.
Really good stuff.
Yeah.
So notes taken by her make several references to London and the World Multi-Lat JIC, which could be a direct reference made by Steele to the Joint Intelligence Committee. And I'm just going to summarize here. We know GCHQ was involved with transferring intelligence over. Brennan comes back in again because we know that Brennan had gone over to London. We know that Bill Priestep had gone over to London. We know that Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, and Jim Comey, I believe, had gone over to London in this time frame. So we know that the stuff in the FISA warrant and the stuff that has to do with all that and the declassification of these documents is likely going to impact the UK-US relationship greatly. Jeff goes on to say in his thread that basically the reason why, what's the gentleman's name that stepped down from GCHQ?
Hannigan?
Yeah, Hannigan stepped down from basically their NSA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to add a little piece here that I don't think many people are talking about, but Jeff is basically saying like they're trying to that Trump has alluded to the fact that this could impact relationships with our allies and that he understands and wants to respect their opinion about not releasing certain things. But at the end of the day, he's going to release whatever he needs to release. And I think that time is now. And what I don't see many people putting together, Frank, is the Huawei piece of this, the China piece of this, the Five Eye piece of this, where China has been infiltrating the Five Eye nations with technology, probably in order to better eavesdrop on what those nations are doing. And right now, the United States is holding all of these nations to the fire in terms of basically disavowing Huawei, which is a Chinese-owned company. And most of their companies are state-run. They're communist. So nobody's disavowed. Like, we're trying to push out Huawei from being in any of these countries, and Intel is stopping to won't make chips for their software anymore, and you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think that there's a bigger story here that's just not uncovered yet, that involves China and involves this trading of secrets and involves the Clinton email server, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't have enough facts to present that as a cohesive piece yet, but I feel like it's definitely a piece. There's a lot of tension worldwide right now.
Tension, it has to be. It just has to be, because all of this was not, at least what we're dealing with right now, is not localized.
No.
It wasn't. That's the scariest part about all this stuff. It would almost be a little bit more comforting if we knew that we were just dealing with our own domestic subversives.
Yeah.
But it's just not. It's not a localized problem. It's metastasized.
It was a threat to the world order. And I keep on saying, like, and you've said the same thing, that like Donald Trump's election was a threat to all of the plans that had been put into place for decades and decades and decades in terms of globalization, open migration, open borders, one world government that is no longer thought of as a conspiracy anymore, because it's not. It's clearly the plan, or was anyway.
Well, it's catching on still. I mean, we saw Australia. You see these polls coming out from France, with Le Pen is starting to nip at Macron's heels again. And then even in the UK, I love how the Brexit Party is surging in polls as well.
Yeah, because people are fed up, and like, you know, I really think we're in such a time of change and like upheaval, and in a good way, you know. All change is hard, right? But it's really up to us to keep the pressure on here and make sure that the right thing happens. Like, that, you know, we don't want to slide into the Mad Queen land or even the Cersei Lannister land. We want the Sam land of, well, not democracy, but, you know, at least some semblance of the people get a choice. And if we don't keep fighting back and keep doing what we're doing, like, you know, people are just fed up with it. It's almost like when progressives are like, mad at corporations but don't understand why they're mad. Like, they don't understand the real reason why they're angry, and that it has nothing to do with free market capitalism. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Their anger is misdirected. Well, right now I think we're seeing a much more focused anger that is directed in the right place for once.
It's a good thing. It is all a good thing. Even, you know, if we're looking for silver linings, because of course it would be a better thing if none of this was an issue, and I don't have to ever care about people like Kamala Harris.
Oh my God. Oh.
I just saw I'm gonna tear into her and Allison Camerota tonight.
Just make sure you protect yourself, please.
What, with condom or something?
I mean, who knows what you're gonna do? I just want you to be safe.
I always wear a condom when I go live. I always wear a condom when I go live.
You know, if more people did that, we wouldn't have the problems we're having right now in terms of sex strikes and all the like.
I know. But then again, the people who are sex striking are probably the ones that you don't want to have sex with anyway.
This is true.
I saw that Maisie.
Oh, God.
Hirono, that creep from that island. She went and she's talking about abortion rights and all that stuff, and even making abortion available to
eighth graders. She can't even get a sentence out, Frank.
No, they're all gross. And I also love with the whole abortion thing there too. Since we're talking about sex strikes and protection and all that, I love how that most of the old arguments about separation of church and state is just dying, because I know so many people now who are standing up and saying, you know what? I see where this slippery slope is. We're at the bottom of the slope now. And I am not a religious, I'm taking an ethical stance, not a religious stance.
You know, it's crazy that you say that too, because I was talking to a bunch of people. I got the opportunity to speak to hundreds of people this weekend. And a lot of them were saying, I've always been pro-choice. And like seeing the extreme this is going to has changed my mind. Like they're, if they would have just left well enough alone, Frank, if they would have just left well enough alone instead of going so disgustingly and murderously to the left, this wouldn't be an issue right now. Alabama wouldn't be passing abortion bans, and you know, other states wouldn't be doing what they're doing. And there wouldn't even be a question really of Roe versus Wade. Like the Democrats started out saying that Trump was going to try to repeal Roe versus Wade, and they ended up being the ones to cause the people to talk about repealing Roe versus Wade.
Yeah. They were the only, because in their hysteria, they are the Anakin Skywalkers. They are the Anakin Skywalkers of politics, where they are just, they are so up. I don't know what it is. They put so much energy into trying to prevent it. I don't know what, and they end up ruining everything that they think that they're fighting for.
Yeah.
Everything that they think they're fighting for, they make it so much worse. And I'll tell you, the, when it comes to the abortion thing and in Roe versus Wade, I mean, I hope it just crashes. Although the only thing is that I think that with all these, there's definitely going to be challenges at the state level. And I just don't know. I know that there is a majority right now in the Supreme Court, but with John Roberts in there, I just do not think it's, but once again, with, you look at, Missouri saying, you know what, you can play around with all the gun legislation you want in D.C. We are a sovereign state, and this is we have the 10th Amendment, and you have the Second Amendment restraining you. So we're going to ignore everything you're doing.
Yeah.
Alabama, I know that ultimately we want to hear a new opinion on Roe versus uh-huh. Wade. We want a new opinion, but even opinions are not law. If judges have an opinion that is contrary to the Constitution and how it is written, it is not law. It sets some legal precedent, but it is up to the states to say, we are kindly refusing to follow your opinion. I mean, Alabama just needs to just keep walking straight forward. That's all.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think what they're doing there is great. I really do, because it's gotten to a point now where, I mean, we could have the abortion conversation forever, but it's disgusting. We're killing kids, like literally killing them for it. Just, I can't even believe these people are standing up with bullhorns advocating for this.
Yeah. And nobody I know that is up in arms about this now is quoting Bible verses to support their stance.
Right.
So they're even projecting what they're up against as far as the resistance to the craziness that they are introducing here. If this really was something where we were having some kind of a reasonable discussion about health to the mother, survival to the mother,
right,
and violent crime, if it really was about that, which that accounts for less than 2%. Of total abortion, this would have never, ever been an issue. This is a cultural trend that they're bucking.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And there was just a thing that came out that basically said that they have to keep reasons for abortion in Florida. 75.6% of abortions in Florida are elective for no reason other than they just don't want the baby.
Yeah, because the social life has to stay healthy.
It's
so, and I hate to reduce it to that, because, you know, I've only, like I said on my show a couple of episodes ago, I've only had recreational sex. I don't have any children, so I'm not sitting here as a prude or anything like that. But at the same time, if you, the only function for our reproductive organs and our reproductive rights is to reproduce. And what are we reproducing? Human life.
Yeah.
We are human life reproducing human life. And it's just ethical, and it is just logical. And when it's the same thing as anything else you see in a, you know, a national park where they tell you, don't feed the wild animals. You know, do not do anything that changes something within a species, structure, survival structure, anything that is going to remove consequences from actions. The abortion industry is actually the industry of changing human behavior. It is actually destroying the species because there's no responsibility left.
It's gross. Not this.
Oh my God. Lord, Frank, you just made such a brilliant point and I just completely ruined it because I was going to answer something else, but I said it's gross as I was taking a bite of the breakfast that Amy just put in my lap. And she thought I was talking about breakfast. It was
gross breakfast. I actually haven't had breakfast yet. After I'm done with this, I'm going to go grab myself a coffee.
You should have seen her face, Frank. You should have seen it.
How dare you? It's trying to feed my friend.
She put it down. I put a potato in my mouth because I'm starving. I'm listening to your brilliance in what you're saying about the cultural change and blah. And stop. Just accept the compliment, damn it. Please. Okay? You. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Are you all right? Are you okay?
I'm fine. I'm just looking at the ceiling.
Anyway, I take a bite of the breakfast and then you're done talking. So I say, it's gross in response to you. And Amy's just like, oh.
Hey, you know what? First of all, send my love to Amy again. And here is, I want to read you, one of my favorite satire websites is Clickhole. Clickhole.com, but another one that is quickly rising in the ranks for me is the Babylon Bee.
Mm-hmm.
It is a satire website, and I think it's pretty Christian, to be honest. But they do satire amazing. Here's the headline from yesterday, May 21st, 2019. Elizabeth Warren surprises graduates by announcing she will sharply increase their taxes to pay for their student loans.
Wait, before we go,
yeah.
Didn't AOC say something about the donor that stepped forward to pay all of the extra leftover student loans?
She did.
Didn't she say there was like a bad thing?
No, hold on. I see. I can't wait. Let me go to that creep.
I feel like I have to apologize again for ruining that abortion talk with something so comical that shouldn't have been there. That was very unprofessional of me.
Oh, well, I'm fine. I'm fine with
it. You didn't bother you?
No, we got everything. We hit these points a lot.
Okay.
It's all good. I'm going through her Twitter right now to try to find that one thing.
She said something really stupid, like, I don't remember exactly what it was. And also, before we go, did you hear that Don Jr. is, like, considering running for mayor in New York City?
Really?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Wouldn't that be amazing if they had another, they had somebody different in New York City? That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Now it would be a tough sell, but then again, maybe not.
Maybe.
You know, because that's all five boroughs that gets to vote for that.
Yep. Staten Island.
I mean, Staten Island would be a huge thing. I mean, you'd get a lot out of Brooklyn. You'd get a lot out of Queens and the Bronx more than you think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
More than you think.
It would be really good because New York really needs help right now. I mean, that city needs real serious help.
They know it. They know it.
I think they do. And I think that thinking about paying for the illegals' health insurance out of their own tax money, or even Long Islanders that work in the city and have to pay New York City tax on top of their local tax, will feel the same way.
They know it. It's not good enough to just go and vote Democrat in that city anymore. Just like in Chicago, I saw this. I mean, you want to talk about satire. The Babylon Bee does it well, but everybody else is just actually really living out the satire. I saw this headline out of Chicago. I was just going through the headlines real quick on maybe a Monday night show or something. And what did I see? Chicago inaugurates their first black lesbian mayor. I'm like, oh, great. That should fix everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that should fix everything in Chicago.
When I'm looking for any sort of a leader or doctor, the first thing I ask them is, what's your sexuality? And are you sure that you're a minority?
Yeah. New York City is in billions of dollars of debt, budget problems. There's promises have been made to give $100 million worth of medical coverage to at least 30,000 non-citizens. You have, of course, rolling back of public policies, yeah. Whether it be public urination, anything that they do there to make people feel like there's actually something going on, where standards are being upheld. The police can't stand the mayor. Whatever the hell it is going on here, where everything is politics and nothing is about taking care of kitchen table economics or whatnot, the first thing anybody should be asking when they're electing a new representative or a new city council is, how do you have your orgasms? How do you prefer your orgasms? Can you tell me, please?
Oh,
ridiculous.
Frank. We're done, Frank. That's a good way to end, I think. You think Don Jr. would answer that question?
Yeah. Oh, I like him intense and frequently. I like frequent, intense orgasms. I stand by everybody. I don't think you're alone there, Frank.
I don't think you're alone.
I don't care who you love. I hope everybody is having intense and frequent.
And with that, we will say, you have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Wednesday Adams Val.
He said that so silently. And Beans. You guys can hear us again on Friday for sure. But you could also hear us 2:30 Eastern every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com. Thank you for joining us today.
Bye.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I believe that in the world that we're in with food right now, we have an opportunity that we have never utilized before. We're looking at more creativity. We're looking at better, healthier products. We're looking at better tasting products as well because of the fact that the word global is getting smaller and smaller, or bigger and bigger, whatever way you want to think about it. To me, the word global is actually getting smaller because I have access at my fingertips to buy a product from anywhere in the world that I want to buy a product. You know, I want to buy a traditional garlic chili paste. I can walk into an Asian market and buy a phenomenal product, or I can look for a product online and then I'm finding out products that are fermented, that are, you know, have a great shelf life to it, or, you know, that's more of a natural product that's being brought into me. That's the type of stuff that I like to see and I like to look for when I go into restaurants these days.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.